enjoy yourselves on most of them. I'll give a countdown from 5 and then we can start the session. 2, 1. Good day to everybody.
Good day.
Yes. Are most of you good Lutherans? Because you said good day back. Maybe you have some good Catholics or Buddhist, Hindu, agnostic, atheist. Everyone's welcome. To introduce myself, I would say in the Lakota language, Tatanka Shina Mieyo, which means I am called Buffalo Rover. And while I'm in the session here, I'd appreciate it if you want to address me, you could just say Buffalo Rover. The white name that I have, the one I was born with from my mother's side, is John Damien. But even that is not our true blood name, because I found out recently that my father was not a Damien. My father, as a child, was taken away from his people and is split away from his two brothers. I have possibly, therefore, I guess, two uncles living somewhere, hopefully. I don't know anything of. And we don't know his name. We don't know his people. It is thought he may have been white, he may have been Irish, he may have been Indian, in part, or part Mexican, because when he was taken away, he was living in Southern California. And where I was born was on the Indio Desert. In Spanish, Indio is Indian. It's the town I was born in and raised as a young child. I would first, I guess, to begin our session, welcome you to Holden Village, and this is about Native American spirituality. I'm wondering first, do we have any people here who are, I guess we now, most of all of us are mixed bloods of some sort, but any who have Native American heritage in your background? Yes. And would you like to say what your background is?
I have a lot of the same experience that you have had being taken away from your family. I am part Cherokee, and I have the same interest because I'm also part German. But I was raised by a Norwegian and Swedish.
So, part Cherokee, and you, ma'am?
Yes, and I'm part Cherokee, and I'm part Irish, and I'm part Scottish.
Did I see others? Yes.
The closest we can come to figuring out on my father's side, we are from Kickapoo.
Kickapoo, yes. Good people. Mm-hmm. Others? Others maybe perhaps wonder. Some like me may have, but don't know. Hopefully not just yet, but will know. Also, I guess, I'm trying to see if there's one particular nice lady I met in the boat. I don't see her here. I need
you
a...
Don't see me. I have a plug in my...
Well, is it you?
Did you notice I qualified myself as a nice lady? You were talking
well,
to
then
me.
That's Dorothy then, right?
And Sister
Frieda.
Frieda. Sister Helen, you've got a solid vote.
Well, Frieda, would you be willing to help me with some things?
Well,
I
don't...
I just need somebody to help open up some of these things and show
some.
Okay. All I need you to do is sit right next to me.
Yeah, do you want it yet?
In a way, to explain now, I also need to know, do you have a watch?
Yes, I do.
What time? I need you to tell me when it's about, say, 5 after.
Okay.
So. Give me a nudge so we have a chance for the whole family here to speak and to make comments. To first, I guess, set some etiquette, perhaps I'll say. I will try to speak for no more than, say, 20 minutes or so, 30 minutes. I spent 14 years of my life saying what I'm going to say to you now, so it's hardly possible to do that. But I'll try in the confines of our agreement here to speak, have a class for 1 hour. And beyond that, if others care to stay, that's fine. But we will dismiss them at 11:30. So for the last half hour or so, we'll have a chance for the whole, as I say, the family. It would be in Lakota, Utakiwiki, my relatives, because indeed this is what you are, and you are relatives to each other. When I speak, though, I ask no one else speaks. No one else raises their hand, no one else interrupts. Everyone is silent and quiet, and hopefully you're listening. And then when it comes time for any of you to speak, you can simply, I guess, raise your hand would be the easiest way to do it. And when you speak, nobody else will interrupt you. Nobody else will speak while you're speaking. Nobody else will say, wait, I didn't hear, please, what did you say, or I disagree. Because I'm not here to convert anyone. I'm not here to debate anybody. I'm not here, as Oprah Winfrey, or as Geraldo Rivera. I don't listen to the one who shouts the loudest and the longest. What we prefer instead in the native way, the traditional way, is to be quiet and respectful of each other and to listen. In that sense, I've asked my helper here, in a sense, as an honor to her, to assist me in certain things here. But this is one way that people recognize one another as a thing. Tell me if the room gets warmer.
I will, but it's just that you have a very soft voice, and I want everyone to hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me in the back?
No, I couldn't. You can move up there.
Oh, okay. Can you still?
Yes.
Can you still hear me?
Yeah. Much better.
The sound technician said we can turn up a little bit. I don't want to get any feedback. This is why we honor those among us, is by, in a sense, asking them to do for us, because it is an honor to serve and to assist. To first start, my background. When I speak before groups, and I've spoken on the East Coast and West Coast, I don't lecture. I don't speak as the one who imparts pearls of wisdom, because nothing that I have is really from my own consciousness. It perhaps is fed by my consciousness. Nothing is from my own heart particular, but perhaps is fed by my heart. But what I've learned in life has been given to me by others. And the others, at first, were my mother, who raised me after my father's death, who he died when I was 5 years old. And my teachers and my pastors of the Catholic Church. I was born and baptized as Catholic, my father's faith, but as Lutheran, my mother's faith. And so the elders, as we say, the ancestors, are those who are the teachers and the treasure keepers and the storytellers. And for 14 years, I listened and lived among, first as a minister among the Sioux, which is a white word, the Lakota, or the Dakota people of North Dakota. And I was a pastor on the congregation, even though my people were mostly the whites. I learned and watched the native people. And I also lived for 3 years in the Boston area and just have moved back. And I met there the Nipmunk and the Wampanoag, Mi'kmaq, the Abenaki, people of the Algonquin nation or the Algonquin dialect. And they have, what I share to you today, has really come to them from their hearts. Nothing I say today was said in secret. Nothing I say today I was told don't say to anyone else. All that I share, they say, they not only will share it, but they welcome people to come and learn, because there is a new revival, in a sense, on the Eastern people, I hope among the Western now, to say that there are four colors of human beings. In traditional sense, we say, speaking 100, 200 years ago, the people of the Red Nation, the Black Nation, the Yellow Nation, the White Nation. But we say there's only one race, and that's the human race. And all the teachers and elders I've met have said there's only one God. And one God made all the colors, and God delights in those colors. It's the colors themselves who fight among each other. It's not the will of the one above. So we are all here now relatives. When I speak of spirituality, I don't say religion, because, let me clarify one thing too. When I speak of the people who would call themselves traditional, those who follow the old ways, the old teachings from the grandmothers and grandfathers. There are many different voices now, many different ways of being an Indian, but I speak of those who come from the old days, let's say. So I speak in that sense, not meaning to say just Indians in general, but so you understand. I speak about traditional people. Traditional people have no religion. Traditional people have a spirituality. Spirituality is far different to me than a religion. Even as a Lutheran minister, I did not consider myself a religious person. I hoped I never was. And by that word, I don't mean to offend those who find it a good word. I mean to say, I am not cold and static and bound by certain laws that are only on stone. But I do have traditions and paths that guide me, but they are like living stones now. I mean, even among our Jewish ancestors, those who brought Jesus to birth, they have a lively and living faith because they interpret the stones in a modern day way. Therefore, I prefer the word spirituality. I want to, Frida, would you first open up this bundle here? I want you all to be children, in a sense, like in a big toy shop. And we're going to, rather than lecture to you and explain to you and diagram to you, I will simply do and show. And you'll see the chance that it took me 14 years to see some of these things and do some of these things. But I speak not as one who's from the outside looking in. because I am from the outside in a sense, but I am also one who's on the inside. And so what I do and say is from one who's within and wanting to share it without. So I'm not just a curious white man. I know I am half white from my mother's side, but I'm one who's also been brought in by adoption into the Native people, and who has been given a name of buffalo robe in a sacred ceremony. And so what I say from one who is also, in a sense, as an ordained minister of the past, a holy man of the white nation, is the way I would be described. Though I am not holy, the gifts I've been given are. Frida, can you give me this back? The back of that. And could you unwrap the plastic out of those two things? To begin with, for our listeners, I'm unwrapping a roll of sage. This is, I guess, almost something like maybe grandma would put in spaghetti sauce. And I have something, sweetgrass. Two very sacred items to the Lakota and Dakota, and some identify themselves as Nakota people. Those are the great Sioux Nation. These are not just pretty plants that smell nice. These are gifts from the one above, used in sacred ceremonies. And to first, I guess, bend to the rules that we have here at Holden Village, I can't really have coals in this room and the possibility of giving off any kind of problems to our alarm system, since they are very careful about the fire. I would normally have had this turtle shell filled with sand to make it cooler, and then coal and what they call smudge when burned, not with flame but with a coal, the sage over this, and then with the smoke and the fumes coming, we say it purifies. It'd be almost in a sense like a priest with a censure, even though it's not the same exact thing, it is still the idea. This blesses the congregation, and a person will go around, and sometimes even would say like this, to help ensure purity of mind and thought, so that we have a session that's people of one mind, let's say. And as the smoke rises, the smoke purifies. There would be also a time in which we'd have sweetgrass, and sweetgrass, if any of you saw Dances with Wolves, I do believe that was sweetgrass, the way they were using it. They were about to defend a village, and so one of the clan mothers put this before, I thought it was her son's face, and he went like this, remember, four times, in the teepee before the battle was to begin. Sweetgrass is one in the sense that they would also sometimes use, not so much as an idea of purifying the sage, but as one that brings in the good. The sage chases away the bad, let's say, the sweetgrass brings in the good, to be very gentle. Then we would say we are ready to begin. And most of the holy men and holy women would then feel at peace in their heart, knowing that things are done properly. Now I take, let me give you the sage, the top one. I take some of the sage myself, and then this is how I will teach today. In my own prayers, these are the things, as I say, most of you do not see, some never see. Not because, in a sense, I don't like the word secret. That's not an Indian word. I prefer the word sacred because they're very personal and very holy things. So it's not something you do out in front of the public all the time. But what I do in my prayers, and I would sometimes take some of the sage like this, just to show you how just one person does this. Not all have the same way. And we'll take the sage and rub it on my forehead like this for thoughts of purity and goodness. On my eyes, and that what I see and what comes to me would be good. And then on my lips, that as we say today, Nishante, from my heart, Wowagate, I will speak, and almost as sacred as a pipe, a vow that no evil or lie would come out. And then I, against my heart, would rub this and say that the very soul of my being would be good today. And then I would go like this. Four times, a sacred number to the Sioux, saying in all things, all of life would be good today. And then from there, this is how we'll say, were the thoughts. What are the spiritual thoughts of the traditional person? I can only say again, one time, I don't mean to lump everyone together, but I just can't say nation by nation, tribe by tribe, clan by clan, person by person, literally what we have to do. So please don't misunderstand. But I have to say something today. So I will say of just very general things. The thoughts. What are the thoughts of the Native American, in particular the Sioux, or the Dumont, of spirituality? The thought of spirituality is first, there's no such thing as a church, as far as a building, let's say. In that, I mean, on Sunday, I go to church. On Monday, I leave church. On Tuesday, I go to work. On Wednesday, I go to club. Thursday, I go to Nautilus. Friday, I go swimming or take the kids to basketball. Saturday, I go to dinner, whatever. Sunday, I go back to church. Every day is church. Every day is a spiritual day for the Native American. The thoughts, the spiritual thoughts are, I am not here to convert you to my Indian way. I've never in my life, except for, I wouldn't even call it evangelizing, but some of the elders and leaders of the Algonquin people, to unify the people, let's say, but not to proselytize, not to say, you must have my visions, my dreams, my songs, my drum. They did not evangelize in that sense, though they thought their faith was good. To be native, traditional, spiritual, would also be to say that the Spirit's presence is everywhere. That the hard thing for me, I mean, you have to understand, I am now still serving two Lutheran parishes, but as a sort of interim lay person, I no longer have 20 hours or more a week in the ministry. I no longer have a clergy roster, but I'm one who was ordained and graduated from Trinity Seminary in Ohio. So I am a Lutheran minister in that sense, in my history. I still consider myself a Christian, in case any of you are wondering. But I am still a person who is native. I feel at least by adoption. So I say, these things, many of which I agree with, some I will, of course, I do not agree with in my Christian faith, but these things I agree with. The Spirit is alive and real in everything. So what that means is, the ant that crawls across the floor is a sacred animal. The fly that buzzes around and annoys you is also the sacred animal. The eagle is sacred, and the buffalo is sacred. The tree is sacred. The water is sacred. The air, the earth, the stones. And though we don't always realize, human beings are sacred. That means that we are called to treat everyone as brothers and sisters. That means that every animal should be seen as a relative. I was asked once, I was at a session when I lived near Boston, in a town called Acton. You see, sometimes I walk and I like to. I'll just say these things because if you understand, this is not natural what I'm doing. I'm explaining to you these things to you like a white teacher, I realize that. So understand, in a native way, you would never have this class. You would have known from the day you were born, being raised, you would have been taught the ways by your elders. But you, how many were born and raised in a tribal manner? I thought so. I wasn't either. So at least this is better than being totally ignorant, let's say. I walk around in a clockwise manner. That's just the way I was taught. Some tribes do it counterclockwise. It's good. When I speak, the people were taught in the Western world, and again, I generalize, I know, the shape of the universe is like a, let's say, a pyramid or a triangle. On top is God. Okay. Below are the angels. Below that is humans. Way down there are the bears and the bumblebees and the grass. Here. We ascend better and better, we hope, all the time. We are those who are above the earth. We are there for those who not only now, of course, by perversion, we say, inhabit the earth, but exploit the earth and use the earth for our good. The animals are made for us, for our good. The Native way says the universe is shaped like this, like a circle. And Wampanoag, as they say, the sacred mystery, the whole essence of all that is true and spiritual, is not at the top, it is at the center. And all human beings and all animals, all rocks and trees and mountains, are on what they call the hoop, the circle, the hoop itself. And all are on that same circle as far away as every other one from the center. And out of the center comes all of life. And all of life is asked to give respect back to the center. and then in a sense respect to one another on the poop. Therefore, it was, to just divert for a second, there's a question of ecology. How do we treat the earth? And the Western way was, let's get as much out of it as we can without draining too much, so it won't keep on giving more. The Native way is this. An example, a man had to have a tree. I was working with on a Sundance, or we won young with Chiki Sundance. And it had to be a living tree, which he was sorry to do. So this is the way he did this. He walked up, and this was man's name, it was Kenny, he is Wampanoag. Again, maybe I have to excuse myself a little bit. It was before the Sundance, so it was a tree for the arbor. Either way, he takes Kenny over, here's his tree. Kenny's a good man. He would approach the tree. Now, I didn't hear all the words or such. This is the way he said was the proper way, the way he would teach sometimes, I believe. He put his arms around the tree and would embrace it like a brother. He said, this is a good way to start. And you apologize to that living relative for having to take his life. And then you might ask, indeed, is it all right, my brother or sister? Because our people had need. And only then, when you feel in your heart it's a good thing to do, do you take the tree. And you always offer a gift, some tobacco or beads or feather or something. And then you only take only what you need. Everything else is left. This is the understanding people are to have in the spirit. In the eyes, the way we see, I want to speak to you about visions. And again, there are some visions that are given to me that are only for me, as given to everyone, only for them. But there are some that are given for all the people. And so I've had to think long and hard about this. Some do not, this is not their way, and so it should not be done. In my own understanding, and what I what has been shown to me, I do feel that there is permission given me to say these things now. So I ask that, especially those who might be listening, to just listen with respect. To help you understand, this is not a little game I want to play or a little like show and tell. This is very real. But it will show you, in a sense, and tell you, in one way, what it means to have a vision. The elders taught me that basically there are three kinds of visions and people. Though all are good, and all people are good. There are those who work long and hard through all their lives, and maybe have one vision, or maybe two, that's that which sets your whole course. That's the great number of people. There are another number of people who work and pray and prepare, and many visions will come. Now, there's a small number of people who visions just come, and I'm among the third group. Therefore, in a sense, I have to say, nothing I've been given was ever from my hard work or my own efforts. So it was all a gift. One of the divisions I was given was this one. I'll share this with you. And I just, again, ask that you would be quiet and respectful as I say this. I've only said this two times. Once at a sacred gathering and once at a Sundance. So this will be the third time. The vision first, vision is not a hallucination. I don't agree with that word. It is something that is real. It really is there, in a sense. But it's not a vision you see with the two eyes. The vision you see with the eye of the heart. And the vision is given, as visions have been given throughout the Bible. So those who disagree with this, disagree with God. Unless, of course, as some say, the Indians get these from Satan, as some have said. In this vision, I was on the Wampanoag Reservation in Massachusetts. And I was facing towards the north. And the north, later I understand, after I had these things, the north is among the Lakota, the dwelling place of the Buffalo Nation. I was looking to the north, and again then, with the eye of the heart, and I was wide awake. I never had taken drugs in my life. I didn't have too much to eat or drink. If you understand what I'm saying, I was perfectly, let's say, normal, and this just came as a gift. I saw in the distance something dark moving towards me like an animal, and then the first thing is, I could almost like feel its breath, and I could smell then the aroma of fur and of hide, and then I could feel on the ground actually shaking, and then what I saw was a Tatanka buffalo, and it came right up to me through the lodge. that I had helped to build for prayers and such. And this buffalo was about 10 feet tall, I mean, unnaturally tall, obviously, from the ground to the head. And the buffalo stood charging at me, and I just stood there, and again, that unseen, in the vision, stopped all of a sudden, but I wasn't even afraid. I knew I'd be all right. And then the buffalo stood up, like a human being stands up, put its two front paws as such to the center of its chest, and pulled off its fur like a rope, and put the rope around my shoulders, pulled it over my head, and wrapped it around my face, and everything became dark. And then, through the darkness, I saw more than you can see with the human eye. Because through the darkness, I saw the earth. The whole earth was covered with white. And I didn't understand all these things, what they meant. But I just say what I saw. The whole earth was white. And out of it, little brown bits came up. I thought at first they were trees, because they grew up tall and slender and started to spread. Then I saw they were human beings. And I understood in my mind, they were the first people. These human beings then formed a circle. And I looked, and I just understood. I was looking at thousands of years of time like that. The circle got larger, but it was still a circle. The people multiplied, and I heard songs. I saw dancing. I saw some crying, and I saw some dying. But it was all very natural, all very real. And then the ground was green, and the people flourished. And I could feel the warmth of the sunshine, and it was a happy day for them. And thousands of years again passed. And then the ground was again white. And what I saw was wounded knee. Now I understand that. And I saw an old man, a warrior, his body was tired, but his spirit was strong, running, holding the hand of a woman, an Indian woman. And the Indian woman was tired, but very strong in spirit, running along, holding the hand of a child. The child was frightened, of course, but trying to be brave. Then I heard, as if from above, a little bit, a voice came out. It said, "You cannot run faster than the bullets. You cannot run faster than bullets." And then I saw the blood go into the snow. And because the blood was warm, it melted the snow, and the bodies fell into the snow with the blood. And the snow came and covered them up. And it was almost as if they had never been. And I felt that people who had been happy before and holy and strong, I could feel inside their heart and their ways growing cold and still to where they could no longer even cry anymore. And all they did was survive. Now beyond that, there's not, I can tell, the rest was meant for one particular people, a drum group that I've said the rest to. That is one of the main visions, let's say, of my life. That is, in a sense, what it means for a person to see with the eye, to see something sacred that is not meant to make me stronger, or me better, or me be able to say these things to you and stand up and say, "I hope you like me now," or "I hope I'm approved," or "I am special." This is meant to help make the people, the family, stronger. Because when we say these things to each other, we have to recognize that everyone has a vision, in a sense. Everyone at least can be given a vision. Everyone has a chance to make the people stronger. Visions like this are not meant then to glorify, but to unify. How do we speak in a spiritual sense? I can only say from my own example for right now. When I was growing up, all I knew it was honestly, and I say this, well, God would have struck me dead with lightning. Do it now, okay? I never lied, I think, for 22 years, 25 years. So I'm not going to start. Wouldn't have been bad. But I got corrupted in college. I smoked one cigarette. Now, that was a bad thing to say because I'm your smoker. My mom caught me underneath the house sneaking her slap in the face. The only time she ever hit me in her life said, never smoke again. I never did. I've never taken drugs in my life. I never cursed, never swore, never was angry with, well, I was angry, but never was hostile and vented my anger at anyone. I was a kind of youngster all through my adult life, almost, who was quiet and kind, always wanted others to be happy, always liked to take care of things, always wanted things to go well, go smooth. I later asked an Indian elder, an Abenaki man, Wildcat, why this was. And I said, in a way, I think I already know the answer. Because I said, when my father died, his family was taken away when he was 5. When I was 5, he died in a traffic accident and went away. I said, in a sense, I had a new father, a new teacher, and that was the one above. Even though my mother was good and a good teacher also, of course. But I somehow just knew, you don't lie. You don't cheat, you don't gossip, you don't badmouth. Whatever you say, whatever you speak, is what is, and nothing more. He said, that's the Indian way. I said, well, no one ever told me that. It just seemed to be the way to go. He says, well, good. He says, maybe you are an Indian. Maybe you're just a good man. What is it from our heart, in a spiritual sense of Native American? Let's see. I just have to walk, stand up. The book I have with me is Black Elk Speaks. There's copies in the library, a much newer one. They have a much prettier cover. Black Elk Speaks. Black Elk, also like me, well, he was a holy man, a holy of holy men. I'm very poor and not too good at this, but he was born in December, same month as I was, the moon under popping trees. I believe it was when he was 5, he also had his first, in a sense, of vision. When I was 5, that's when the visions and such became real to me. And again, I say, just in case there's a psychiatrist here, I don't mean the strange voices from Mars. I mean, I'm talking real things, spiritual things. I knew my father was dead before anyone told me. It was simple as that. And that's when things started. And that is the night that he went away. But we are told that with our heart, in a spiritual sense, that we're always to be humble, always to be grateful, always to be respectful. That is why, in a sense, among the Indian people, the traditional Indian people, the man who is the greatest, the woman who is the most honored, is the woman who usually is the quietest. I don't mean they can't tell jokes or laugh. I mean quiet in spirit. The one who is considered the most honored is the one very often who is considered themselves the lowest. And is willing to do and to serve and to take care of others, more than say first, me, me, me. The one who's the richest among the native people is the one who is usually the poorest. And I don't mean just a cliche of rich in heart. I mean the one who very often has the most possessions would be the sachem, let's say the chief, the medicine people, we now say the shamans, general generic term, but the holy people, the healers, the vision people, very often given many gifts. But very often what they do, if not always, is then give the gifts away to him. And you'll find, therefore, that sometimes the poorest man, I say man because I'm not being sexist, I'm saying the basic Lakota way was the male were the rulers, the chiefs and such. They were the richest for a while, but then all that they got, they gave away, and they became the poorest. And sometimes people even had to bring them food. But they were considered, therefore, the most honored. This is the way of the heart, to be quiet, to be considerate, to say, if there are two people walking into a room, and there's one chair, most of the time, the way I was raised in the white world, whoever gets there first gets it. I mean, that's usually the way to go. Try to find a good seat at the theater, you'll find out. The way it is in the native world, sometimes you might even have a fight, if both of them are traditional. You go. No, you go. No, you can have it. No. But you understand what I'm saying, the practical sense. It is to consider the other person first. You consider not what is good for me, but what is good for the people
the people. That is what is so much a theme of the traditional native spirituality. I am one who is put here to be strength among those who also can be strong, to make all of us live better and happier. All of this and these things that I say to you, I want to give you a chance to think about, and then to have a chance for you to comment on or to ask questions about. If I could, I will say one last thing. I will be speaking the next 4 days, tomorrow, on rituals and rituals and ceremonies. Again, some things that I have seen that will not be spoken about, but some that I have seen that I've been told it's all right to say again, and will share with you, particularly with the talking stick, which I have here, and with the use of tobacco and sage, such as this, and to talk about, as we use this sometimes for the stones in a sweat lodge, or the nipi, better way, the purification lodge, to speak about the sweats tomorrow, to speak about the sundance, to speak about the vision quest, to speak about other ways of being ceremonial and ritualistic. And then I speak about native dress, which is part of what I wear now. This is not a costume. Please don't get me angry by saying you have a nice costume. Kids wear costumes at Halloween. Does a priest wear a costume? Does a policeman wear a costume? Does a judge wear a costume? They wear what is called among the people regalia, or the dress. They are marks of distinction and of identity, sometimes with clans, sometimes with animal. The animal I wear, the feathers, the stone, they all have a meaning. They weren't just what was on sale at so-and-so trading post. I wear this all for a purpose. And then lastly, on Friday, talk about the music and the dance. And we're going to invite everyone, of course, I think my last one is during the lunch hour, but to have a round dance, which we'll do out, if I can get the room out, in the village center, because it's nice and flat, which is a rare thing here. And even though it's hard, it's a good place for some people like me who maybe have difficulty to dance. And we're going to learn an Indian dance. What time is it, Gilbert?
Time is 11:45.
Okay, well, see, let me go 5 minutes too long. But you've been very quiet. Now let me know when it's about 10 more minutes later, because we have to go at 11:30. Now, again, as etiquette, if whoever wants to say something or ask something, can just raise your hand, and you'll be the only person to speak, and we all listen to what you say. But please make it, if you can, quick, so we're courteous to each other, so others who might have something to say or to ask can have their turn. One thing, I noticed Mark came into the room, and we just introduced or gave a chance to introduce people who are Native or part Native.
I'm Mark Bremen. Teal is my Indian last name, and I'm from Gokomish Tribe, which is Washington State, southern part of Puget Sound.
Well, we welcome Mark. Thank him for his honoring us, in a sense, with his presence. Now, who would like to say something or to ask something?
Do most of the tribes, the nations, pretty well follow the same traditions? I mean, I know that just by hearing one town, one state, et cetera, there's slight differences. Yeah. But
well, the same coast
to coast.
Like, for example, what do you mean?
Do the Skokomish, for example, follow very similar, although using different names, very similar traditions and ways as, say, the Lakota or the ones from Massachusetts that you said that I can't pronounce.
Oh. Well, first, I guess, as far as what they have in common, I think most would say what they have in common is a high moral standard. I'm talking about, again, traditional. A code of respect and of honor, of bravery, of fortitude, of strength. And this is a code, I think, shared by almost border to border from beyond Canada down to South America. They have a stress on the family that they all agree. The family is sacred and the family is strong. When the family is strong, the people are strong. They all, I think, in some way, share the idea that music is sacred, that dance is sacred, that people worship the one above and are also, say, fed and nourished by the one above when they dance, when they sing. They share I think, somewhat the same understanding of divinity in a way, though of course they have different names and different things. They, in a sense, the sacred is just that, let's say sacred, supernatural, powerful, ever-moving, often seen as changing, sometimes judgmental, sometimes downright vicious, sometimes the spiritual beings are tricksters and jokers, and sometimes they're very kind and humble. They believe, I guess, in common sense in a way of just human decency. Where they really are divergent in a sense is, of course, the language they use, the particular regalia they have, the kinds of skins, the kinds of certain animals that are natural to their way of life, or their sense of worship, the ceremonies, their own songs, their own drum. Some don't have drums, some have many kinds of drums, some have flutes, on and on. So there are similarities and differences. Like you'd say, what isn't a European? No, it's the same. What's a Frenchman? What's an Italian woman? What's a Greek? Okay, you can maybe get more like that. Yes, someone else had.
I was born in central North Dakota, the granddaughter of a Norwegian immigrant who came for the Homestead Act. And I moved from there when I was about 8 years old and did not realize until about 10 years ago that I had lived within 40 miles of a major, what is referred to as a Sioux reservation. And I find that to be astounding, to think that I could live my whole full life and not have that awareness of that part of my history. But, and I find it embarrassing too. But I also, you speak of Lakota and Dakota, and I think you used another term. What are the differences there? Because I have heard that this is Lakota near Devil's Lake, North Dakota.
Well, my church was there on a reservation. Uh-huh. You mean Fort Totten?
Yes.
That's mostly Dakota.
Dakota.
Yeah, the proper pronunciation is usually the accent on the second syllable, which means Dakota, or Lakota. But sometimes to differentiate themselves, they say Lakota or Dakota, just like saying Norwegian or German.
Is that, right? The same distinction?
But the same distinction, I'm not sure. I'll just continue. What's the difference between the L and the D and the Nakota was, first, I guess, linguistically, in a sense, they say some use just the L in the alphabet in their language, some use just the D. They're all part of what they call the Sioux Nation. But the Lakota do see themselves as distinct. They are part of what you call the Teton branch. And they have the seven council fires, as some might say. They are the most famous. They are the ones of, like, Sitting Bull, Crazy Horse, American Horse. They are the Hunkpapa, the Minikanju, the Samsark, like that. The Dakota were the ones more to the north and such. But they would all say they're all part of the great nation. But I'm not that surprised either that some people live right next to some native people nowadays. I know some who have white skin and yellow hair and blue eyes. And they are still sometimes even half or a quarter Indian because there's so much intermarriage. Some, of course, when I live in a reservation, don't even want to go near a reservation. They still consider those lazy, welfare ridden, drunken bums live on reservations. So, yes.
And what would Native American people, or what do they tend to say in regard to Jesus?
Well, two things. There are Christian Native Americans, and there are those who say, well, Jesus, for instance, I was invited to smoke a pipe by a Assiniboine man in Bismarck. And he come from Canada for a powwow. And he was sitting there, and another man came in and said, what's this Washishu doing here? Which he had a right to say, because he didn't know I was invited. But Washishu was the Lakota word for white man. Well, it was not a word made by Lakotas, I don't know. But it means, basically, I understand, stealer of the grease. Some say, though, those who wear pointed hats, there's different explanations for it. But a white man. So I went to the lodge to smoke. What was your question?
Consideration of Jesus.
Jesus, okay. And he said, knowing I was white, well, he was kind of kidding me. He says, but he asked me if I'm a Christian. I said, yeah. He says, well, you know something? He says, I don't say I'm a Christian, but he says, I swear, if Jesus were to walk into the powwow now, I could say, hey, Jesus, come over here. He'd smile, grin, come on over, sit down and smoke with us. I wonder if some of the things I've been telling you, some of you begin to catch the undercurrent that perhaps you read about these things before. You ever seen this book, it's usually black and it's got a gold cross, this Holy Bible. It talks about things like honoring one another, respecting one another, being kind to each other, being gentle with each other, being honest, being courteous, being humble. Wasn't there someone who said things like that? You see, because of that, there's many Indian people who would never go to church, but who say they think Jesus was a profound teacher and a great elder, would have made a terrific medicine man. But they won't pray to him, but they say he was good for the white people. Others, of course, who just say, don't shove your white religion down my throat. I don't want to hear nothing about Jesus and stuff like that. Yes. Okay. We've still got about 4 minutes before I may wrap up. Anybody else would like to share something or ask something?
Were you going to touch on later Washichus and our word is positive in our language ended up trying to grasp Native American spirituality again.
Well, if you want me to get
teachers
get down
teaching
to it.
Positive,
let me say some things.
Is that going to be a class?
Well, I will talk about the history and the culture and the usurping of the church and the mission schools and government bureaucracy and BIA, things like that, during one of my sessions on history and culture. But one thing you did say rang a bell, white people, I guess, trying to learn or trying to be taught about Indian ways. So I know I debated this and I said, don't do it, John, because you'll upset some people. See, so please take this with a grain of salt, okay? Because I know I'm compulsive, sometimes I say things and I get myself in trouble. But I'll say it this way, if I can, as kindly as possible. There are some people, listen to me, all my words before you make up your mind. What we call the New Age movement. The New Age movement, I think, has some wonderful depth to it. It has opened a lot of minds and hearts and brought many people closer to themselves and to each other. But to tell you, there's another side. And again, a traditional elder, an Indian man was conducting a sweat, which I was able to attend. And the Washishus, as you say, the white people, came and they brought crystals, laid them down there. They had a deck of tarot cards. They were talking about interplanetary travel, and they were saying things about different past lives and such. Now, I'm not saying I express no opinion to right or wrong on these things, because I just want to stay away from discussion about that. But the man was offended. I want to, again, keep on listening. Not because they brought crystals, or not because they brought tarot cards, or not because they talked about interplanetary travel, or the latest guru. One was saying, I went to France and saw this monk, or one said, I went to Tibet 2 weeks ago. I mean, these were people with some real big bucks and really knew how to travel around the world and go to gurus and monks and such. He was offended because, first of all, none of them ever asked if they could bring these things into a sweat. They simply assumed they could do it. He was offended because one person, in fact, said it in a sense, I have 1 hour. Can you teach me about visions and dreams? I've got to get going now. He would say he spent 60 years almost of his life, and he's still learning. But he's offended by in white people, which I guess I would be offended by too, are those who simply say, show me some old Indian who can teach me wise things. Slip him $10 or something. Who knows? He'll shut up and be happy. I'm offended by Washishus or white people who come up and simply assume that because you're willing to give, you can take. Because you have something to say, you should say it. There's no reason any Indian person should ever reveal anything of their heart to anyone. I mean, the spiritual side is first of all very personal and very sacred. So those who choose to, I think, should be honored and should be thanked for it. But not every Indian, you should assume, is willing to divulge their heart to. It is disrespectful and wrong. Neither should you be able to assume that what you should get quickly and easily, and read a few books, go to a few sweats or something, learn a few things, and bang, you can say, at least for a while, I was a real Indian, or we did a real Indian thing. These are the things that are very discourteous and really trouble a lot of the Native elder people. And one last thing, which of course could get me in trouble again. Usually people who come to Indians are somewhat better off than the Native people. And because they see the Indian people living without air conditioning or without color TVs, or sometimes they live in a very quiet and humble manner, they make judgments. And I have found some of the most wonderful and kindest and richest people to be those that some people would not even want to look at twice and say their own opinions are formed too quickly. You can't buy spirituality. You can't beg for it necessarily. You can't fight for it, argue for it, hope for it. You can simply, in a sense, just put your hands up and accept what comes and be thankful for what you are given. And that, I think, in a sense, that would be an attitude of honoring to any human being, any person with spiritual values. Well, let's wrap up our session. We would, and those who want to continue our such can, those who are hungry can get going to lunch. Again, a thank you, I guess, and for the end of the tape to all those who came to Holden Village. Thanks to Holden Village for the invitation, opportunity to come here and to be with you. I invite you to look at the schedule of all the speakers, all the session leaders, and to, as much as you can, I guess, avail yourself of them. And if any of you want, as long as you ask nicely, and don't interrupt my meal. I get very grumpy when I'm hungry. I was going to say, if anyone would like to offer a prayer, anyone have a closing prayer or something they'd like to say for us? So I don't want to pick anybody, but yes. Okay.
Thank you this day for private things willingly shared. We thank you for all the gifts of those who are present here. We thank you for their sharing. Keep us open to your gifts, which you are ever ready to give us. In Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.
Well, as a reminder, as a plug for me, because I, as we all know, we are basically all our favorite subjects is ourselves. We like to hear our name more than anybody else's. Tomorrow will be a session then on rituals and ceremonies, and Wednesday on the history and the cultures. Thursday, depending on how many come, on the arts and crafts, I'll bring some things that we can make. We'll also have some feathers with me. People can make some feather decorations or such, or adornments, whether it's their wear or their home or such. And on Friday, the dance. We invite all of you to make sure you can be here. It's a very simple dance to learn, and if hopefully we can get the center, we'll invite everyone who wants to come, and even those who didn't go to class, just to join us for a real quick dance, and you can show them, and we'll have some fun. Great. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's some deer that's come to us a bit.
A little deer medicine.
Question I didn't have a chance to ask is how important is it to use the term Native American for